How's it going, everybody? Happy Tuesday, or I guess happy Thursday, because that's when the episode's going to be dropping. New episode of Pitching to Contact. It's been a pretty long week so far for both of us. Not as long as Barry Bonds' week, but we got a lot to cover. I'm here with Pete. No guests this week. Pete, how's it going, dude? Lots to cover today.
Excuse you. I am the wonderful guest here, but I'm doing good, Richard. How about yourself, man?
I'm doing okay, man. You're not just a guest. You're a co-host, man. You got to give yourself more credit.
Well, I mean, last week you guys were just shitting on me, man. So, like, I don't know. Maybe, like, I'm still, like, recovering from last week and Danny Samet and his pickles and, you know, Mike San and all that wonderful fun stuff.
Yeah, but, I mean, you weren't the Canadian version of a Jersey Shore character. So it could be worse.
Well, I mean, you are the Canadian version of a Jersey Shore character.
Is that a compliment, like, though?
Well, I mean, I don't know. Do you have a situation down in your abdominal area?
Oh, I'm getting there. Just one day at a time.
Do you get what that even means?
One day at a time. We're going to be talking about Hall of Fame, so this is a pretty good segue. I'm just trying to get my cycle right, and soon enough, I'm going to have abs, and I'm not going to be able to fit through doorways. That's the goal right now.
Do you carb cycle?
Oh, no, that wasn't what I was talking about. Not that kind of cycle. Ask Barry Bonds what kind of cycle I'm talking about.
You meant that you carb cycled, and I'm like, oh, you're one of those fitness fanatics.
No,
okay.
No, I don't pay attention to that kind of stuff. I just don't have the time in the day. But I guess that's a pretty good segue. Let's get into the Hall of Fame first. Just before we click the record button, MLB announced the four Hall of Fame. Let's just check through Twitter real quick. We got Mariano Rivera. I think he's the first unanimous selection for the Hall of Fame. Roger Clemens didn't make it. Barry Bonds didn't make it. But Roy Halladay did. Edgar Martinez did. And who's the last guy? Mike Mussina.
Mike Mussina got in too.
Yeah. Rivera got 100% of the vote. Halladay and Martinez got 85.4%. And Mussina just got in at 76.7%. You need 75% to crack the Hall of Fame. The guys on the outside looking in, Schilling at 61%, Clemens 59.5%, Barry Bonds 59.1%, and the greatest Canadian of all time at 54.6%, Larry Walker. What are your thoughts? Initial thoughts, Pete. What's going through your mind?
Oh, man. Well, first off, congratulations to Mariano Rivera becoming the first player to unanimously be selected. His cutter deserves it. That thing was virtually unhittable, unless your name was Edgar Martinez. In that case, you just hit the crap out of it for whatever reason. But, like, in general, just this is a great Hall of Fame class. All four of these candidates are very deserving to be into this Hall of Fame and be enshrined in baseball immortality. And just congratulations to them. Like, this is just an amazing class.
The one thing that kind of stands out to me right away, and I was wondering how you feel about it. Halladay was a first year on the ballot, got 85.4% of the votes. I think Mussina was on the ballot about 4 or 5 years now, something like that, maybe three. And he just barely squeaks in at 76.7%. And, like, if you compare both of their careers and you just look at their advanced stats and the numbers, and, like, they both played pretty much in the same division their entire career. Both of them had pretty comparable careers. Yet, Mussina struggled to get in. Halladay just kind of easily made it in his first try. I know he passed away less than a year ago, I believe. Do you think that had something to do with it? Like, even a little bit? Like, I don't want to be a dick here.
Like, but in general, yeah, you're right. Like, I think definitely it just makes them more relevant and more popular. And this is with all due respect to the Halladay family. Obviously, my condolences are with you. Even a year and a half after the passing of Roy Halladay, it was a very tragic thing. But no, in general, when it comes to Hall of Fame voting and when it comes to the writers and when it comes to those kind of things, like, these things stand out. Like, I mean, Roy Halladay was a class act. He was a really good guy on and off the field, and he was a great competitor, put up great numbers. But yeah, I mean, he passed away, and that definitely, I'm going to assume, sheds some light here, at least a little bit. It
had to.
Like, I mean, it has to just a little bit. Like, yeah, like, I mean, like you said, him and Mussina had really comparable careers. They both played the same opponents. Now, they both played in a little bit of different eras of baseball, but, like, in general, like, no, they had very comparable careers against very comparable competition. And in general, like, I think definitely that I hate to use the word popularity because I think that's a little out of context, but in general, overall, I think it definitely does have a little bit to do with it. And like I said, I say that with all condolences to the Holiday family, but no, he's not like, don't get me wrong. Roy Halladay deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. Like he is deserving of the title that he is getting, but I don't necessarily know if he is a first ballot Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
That's just my opinion. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of people who I would probably name that would deserve that maybe a little bit more than he does, but I understand and I get it just because of his passing and all that. It makes it a lot more popular. It just in general, it's a way of like paying homage, paying respect. So in that sense, yeah. What about you, Richard? Do you think along these lines too?
Yeah, I'm pretty much right there with you. I'm like the way I view Halladay's career is kind of similar to Mussina. If Mussina wasn't the first ballot Hall of Famer, I don't think Halladay is either. And like, look at the type of players that were first ballot Hall of Famers, like Mariano Rivera, Derek Jeter is going to be one. Ken Griffey Jr. was one. Like, those are like next level elite generational talents. Was Roy Halladay a generational talent? I don't think so.
No, I don't think so. You I know? Think he was, a, I you know? Think, like, I if, think he's a Hall of Famer. I just don't think he is a really generational.
Agree. Yeah. Like in my lifetime, other than Clayton Kershaw, I think Pedro Martinez was the best pitcher I've ever seen. Okay.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I can agree with that assessment. Yeah.
Just like off the top of my head, just thinking about it. And I believe Pedro Martinez was a first ballot Hall of Famer. He was a generational talent. Randy Johnson.
Well, Pedro Martinez was unreal.
Sorry?
Yep. Randy Johnson and Pedro Martinez. I said, but yeah, could you hit that right on the head? Randy Johnson, Pedro Martinez, literally, those two guys are on a completely different level, in my opinion, than say Roy Halladay.
Exactly. So, completely on agree.
A completely different level.
Yeah. Right. And I mean, you look at Roy Halladay's career, like, yeah, he has a ton of accolades, but just looking through his stats, like it's similar to guys like Mussina, similar to guys like Andy Pettit. And I mean, Andy Pettit didn't make it. I think it was his first year on the ballot. And Andy Pettit has some steroid stuff in his past, and we're going to get into that a little later. But I mean, taking his tragic passing out of it, I think he deserves the same love as Mussina. And I just don't know if he's a first ballot Hall of Famer. But again, just he's a Hall of Famer in my mind. Maybe not a first ballot guy, but he was going to get in anyways. So, I mean, I'm totally, totally cool with this. And voters are human. Voters are biased. They have emotions. So I understand this. But talking about steroids, let's get into some other names. We have Roger Clemens, who I think is one of the best pitchers of all time and should be in the Hall of Fame. And then Barry Bonds, who I think is the best baseball player to ever play the game. Clemens 59.5%, so just missed by like 15%. I'm pretty sure the jump from last year wasn't that dramatic. Same thing with Barry Bonds, so it's gonna be a stretch for them. I believe they have about 3 years left on the ballot, so they're gonna have to make a push over the next 3 years. What do you think about these guys?
Okay, well, first off, let me address the whole steroid usage thing. Look. Here's the thing. I do not condone cheating. I do not condone anything like that. But as a person who works in baseball already at the collegiate level, as a person who is aspiring to work in Major League Baseball, and we're going to get into that a little bit later too as this episode continues. But in general, you're going to learn once you start getting into the higher, more competitive places in baseball that rules are kind of meant to be broken. And also at the same time, you learn. I take this quote from Greg Williams from on the football, from the football side of things. You need to bend the rules and not break them. And every team does it. And it doesn't matter if it's Notre Dame. It doesn't matter if it's Ohio State. It doesn't matter if it's the Cleveland Indians, New York Yankees, Boston Red Sox. You break the rules in some way, shape, or form. Don't talk about this unfair playing field. It's already an unfair playing field.
Yeah.
In general, look, yes, Barry Bonds used steroids. It's honestly still up in the air the way if he implicitly took it or implicitly took it. Basically, did he mean to take them or not? I mean, we can probably imply he probably did. But in general, like Barry Bonds is easily steroids or no steroids. If Barry Bonds didn't take steroids his entire career and was basically the Barry Bonds that he was with the Pittsburgh Pirates, he's in the Hall of Fame.
Exactly.
He's in the Hall of Fame.
Mm, no, and completely agree.
And he takes steroids and yeah. or not. It's I don't even think it's just because of steroids, but he's still one of the – I mean, just drop down, still the scariest hitter other than Ted Williams that I have ever, like, watched swing in my career. Like, those are the best two hitters I have ever seen. Literally, here's my top three. Ted Williams, Barry Bonds, and basically Triple Crown version of Miguel Cabrera. Those are the three best hitters I've ever seen taken at bat, like ever, and like in general. Like, and I know the tour is kind of an interesting stretch, but trust me, when you saw that guy 50 times in the AL Central, when you watch the Indians all the time, and you see this guy at least 60 at bats per year in front of you, you start to realize how great of a hitter that guy was. Mm-hmm. But in general, like just. In general, though, like Barry Bonds deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. Roger Clemens is one of the most wicked pitchers I've ever seen in my life. Yeah. He deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. It's like guys like, say, Alex Rodriguez, guys like Mike Piazza. Can you tell me those guys don't deserve to be in the Hall of Fame?
Well, I mean, like, Mike Piazza is in the Hall of Fame. But,
yeah.
But, like, the way I look at the situation is, like, put it for example, the New England Patriots, right? We're going to jump into football real quick for a second. They have been caught cheating so many times, right? Three or four times in the playoffs, which is quite a bit. Like, you gotta do something wrong to get caught cheating for cheating. But I mean, Bill Belichick is still going to be a Hall of Famer, and Barry Bonds might have gotten caught. Roger Clemens might have gotten caught, but there's a lot of guys in the Hall of Fame who just weren't caught. Everybody cheats. Really, right? It's just a matter of, like, do you get caught or not? Obviously, there's going to always be some clean human beings, but I mean, there's a lot of rumors about Hank Aaron cheating and using performance enhancers. Mickey Mantle apparently used performance enhancers. I read something on Twitter that Babe Ruth, who's a lot of people think he's the greatest baseball player ever, apparently used, like, sheep testosterone to make himself hit bombs. You know, and he's in the Hall of Fame, and like there's gonna be cheating in sports all the time. So why must we push the guys who, we figured out Barry Bonds used steroids. Why do we have to push a guy like him out when there are guys in the Hall of Fame who have cheated and are still in the Hall of Fame? You know, if the MLB just initially said we're not gonna allow any sort of cheaters in the Hall of Fame, sure. That's totally fine with me. You're going to take out half the guys in the hall right now to just make it as clean as possible. Sure. But I mean, if you have guys who are linked to cheating, then like you kind of have to give Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens the benefit of the doubt. And I mean, the Hall of Fame is what immortalizes players. And can you tell the history of baseball without mentioning Barry Bonds? Probably not.
No, you can't.
You can't tell
the history of the late 90s, early 2000s in terms of hitting without Barry Bonds, Sammy Sosa, players like that. You can't tell Mark McGwire even. You can't tell the story of the home run without that.
And here's the thing. I don't think Mark McGwire is a Hall of Famer simply because all he did was hit bombs, right? But like you look at
he is in the Hall of Famer, I was just saying. Yeah, no.
But you look at Barry Bonds' numbers, like this dude got on base in 1 year, what, like 50 or 60% of the time? That's nuts. That's insane. Like you're not supposed to get on base like that. That's nuts. Like this dude is, in my mind, the greatest baseball player to have ever lived. And like he's entering his seventh year of sitting on the ballot, hanging out at like below 69%, you know, that's kind of heartbreaking. But let's see here. Do you think they're gonna get in before their time runs out, the 10 years?
Here's what I'm gonna say. I actually genuinely think that they probably aren't. I think they're probably gonna stick around where they are percentage-wise now because in general, like they're getting there, but they only have 3 years left, and basically. Yeah. The writers would have to change their minds still exponentially within these next 3 years to allow these guys in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
And if they allow these guys into the Hall of Fame, once again, then it opens up the debate for guys like, say, Alex Rodriguez, et cetera, et cetera. And, like, you know, and in general.
It seems, though, as writers get younger and writers get more progressive, it seems like eventually steroid users are going to get into the Hall of Fame. Like, Alex Rodriguez is not going to be on the ballot for, what, a couple more years? So I feel like because of how voters are starting to look, like, he's going to make it into the Hall, I think. But I agree.
I think he will. I'm just saying in
general. Because of the change in perspective across all the voters. But then you look at guys like Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens. If they don't make it into the Hall of Fame after 10 years of being on the ballot, like, what happens next? Isn't there another vote that happens?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, though, was that I don't think that they're going to get in on this initial ballot run, but I think there is a – I forget what it's called, and I honestly should like probably do my research.
No, we don't.
Yeah, it's like a commissioner's ballot.
Yeah, we don't do research. We don't do research.
Why would we do research?
We have enough going on in our lives, man. But
yeah, that's right. That's completely right. Mm-hmm. But no, in general, like, yeah, like, I know there's another ballot. I think it's called the commissioner's ballot or something like that. That's later on in life. Yeah, I think they'll get in on that. I think they'll get in on that because by then Lance is going to be a Hall of Fame voter. And if he doesn't vote yes on that, I would smack Lance in the face.
Okay.
Oh, sorry. I hope Lance doesn't hear that and then comes on this pod and roasts me.
He very well can. Dude, Lance is part of the media now, and he can affect public opinion. Like,
hey, but at the end of the day, Danny is the media, though. Danny is the media.
But here's another thing I find interesting. We're just going to talk about the Hall of Fame ballot for a couple more minutes. But guys like Omar Vizquel are getting 43% of the vote. He's not a Hall of Famer. Like, I guess that the Hall of Fame comparison for a guy like Omar Vizquel is like Ozzie Smith. But Ozzie Smith was so much better at playing shortstop than Omar Vizquel. Like, I'm a big fan of Billy Wagner, but like when I see him getting votes, I'm just like, are you kidding me? The guy has pitched like 800 innings in his entire career. Clayton Kershaw, like Max Scherzer did that in like 3.5 seasons, you know?
Here's my opinion on the whole Omar Vizquel thing. Mm-hmm. Look, I, as an Indians fan growing up, I mean, not growing up, I've been from Cleveland, and everybody knows about the 90s Indians and the dynasty that should have been, blah, blah, blah. Look, Omar Vizquel was an outstanding talent. He's one of the greatest shortstops. He is until Francisco Lindor retires, the greatest shortstop in Cleveland Indians history and one of the best shortstops in the history of baseball. Mm-hmm. But I don't think he's a Hall of Famer. If you're going to say that Omar Vizquel is a Hall of Famer, then you should also put Andrew Jones in the Hall of Fame. You should put Kenny Lofton in the Hall of Fame.
Andrew Jones
is a Hall
of Famer. Dude, Andrew Jones is a Hall of
Famer. Is he in the Hall?
I think so. Look at his numbers through the first 10 years of his career.
Okay, yeah.
Like, you look at those numbers, plus he was one of the best defensive center fielders of all time. Like, I think that warrants a Hall of Fame nod.
Okay, and Omar Vizquel is to me, he's other than Ozzie Smith, the best defensive shortstop of all time. So,
but like,
and I know that's kind of once again, are you trying to say that Omar Vizquel is a Hall of Famer then?
But also, Omar Vizquel can't really hit. Like, Ozzie Smith played in a time where shortstops weren't really relied upon to hit and hit for power. But he still, I think his like career on base percentage was like right around 340. And like add that with like his insane defense, which is miles ahead of Omar Vizquel. Like, if you look at the advanced metrics, like, it's not even close. Omar Vizquel played in a time where, like, you should probably hit a little bit, you know? Like, if we're talking about different eras, like, I think Ozzie Smith is the best shortstop of all time. I just don't think Omar Vizquel is anywhere close to him, you know?
Okay, that's fair.
But speaking
of Omar Vizquel played on Toronto. Remember when Omar Vizquel played on Toronto Blue Jays?
Yes, I do. He was, like, 50.
Yeah, I remember that. That was fun.
That was not fun. We weren't in the playoffs. We were never in the playoffs, but it's okay because Vladdy Guerrero is coming, and I am so excited. I just watch like every couple of days. I just like turn on some Vladdy Guerrero hitting highlights, and just makes me feel like bubbly inside. And I just get so excited. But speaking of Hall of Fame, this kind of rattled me a little bit today. I was watching an MLB Network video of John Smoltz talking about pitching.
Oh God, don't get me triggered.
Yeah, because no. We weren't going to actually talk about this, but then on my way home from school, I'm like scrolling through Twitter and I'm like, see this. I'm like, oh God, John Smoltz talking about pitching. I shouldn't look at it. But like, I have about a 5-minute walk home and it's really cold and I feel like I'm dying. So I'm just going to listen to John Smoltz right now. Listen to this 3-minute, 26-second video. Why is this guy there? This is the kind of stuff that triggers me.
This isn't 1990. We have biomechanics. We have John, have you read an exercise science? Have you read an exercise science book ever?
No, probably not.
Like,
but here's the thing. When I hear people say stuff like that, like I'm listening to John Smoltz, so I'm like, you sound exactly like a dad who still lives in the 50s, can't use his cell phone, but thinks everything back then was better than it is right now. Like the one thing you said about how guys are lifting heavier right now. And because of that, they're throwing 99 and they're out of baseball 6 years later. Well, if you actually educate yourself and like understand why they're lifting heavier moreover, guys are lifting heavier, but they're also recovering smarter, right? And
yeah, exactly, movement over maxes.
Yeah, exactly. Like dudes don't just lift really, really heavy and then go home, pig out, sit on their couch, and just like don't take any like active methods into like they don't. They have to think about recovery. They have to recover the correct way so they can come out on the mound and perform every single year. Right? That's what like that's science. Science isn't just there to help guys throw harder. It's not only there to optimize performance, it's also there to prevent injury. And if you say that, exactly. If you say that working out only helps with one of the two, like you're just clueless. You're not educating yourself, right? Like,
absolutely. The smartest people in baseball are the people who understand both sides of it, are the people who understand the science behind it and understand the science. Science behind development today in baseball, yeah. But are also able to apply the science in a methodology that not only intertwines the science part of it,
yeah.
But intertwines the actual pitching 60 feet, 6 inches away, putting that ball where it needs to go, locating it, commanding it, et cetera, et cetera. You know what I'm saying? It's being able to combine the two. And the smartest people are able to do that. The people at Driveline Baseball, the people at Top Velocity, even though I know there's a debate there, the people who work in Major League Baseball, the people who are now getting paid a lot of money. Have you seen the revolution of data-driven coaches that are being hired into the MLB?
Dude, like, almost every single team has that now. If you don't, what are you doing? You're probably listening to John Smoltz.
We're hiring John Smoltz as our pitching consultant so he can teach us how to throw his wicked two-seamer. And it's like, and you want to know what's funny? Here's what makes me laugh too. He's like, yeah, I did all this stuff and I used to throw 93 to 94 and then I could still get it up to 98, 99. And then I would like sit on a couch for half the off season eating cheeseburgers. And then I'd throw a baseball once in January and I'd be great. And I'm like, you still threw 93 to 94 miles an hour. Like, I just don't get – I'm just like, I don't get it. Like, these kids are just working their tails off to try to get to the level that you were just magic – not magically. You still worked hard, but, like, you were still – that you were at. Like, some people have that athletic ability, and some people don't. And, you know, the game is much harder than – I would say now than it was back then.
I completely agree.
And every – pitching is completely different now. Pitching isn't east-west anymore. It's north-south.
Yeah.
So, it's
– That's the thing. And I – honestly, it doesn't seem like this guy realizes how difficult it is to be as good as John Smoltz was. You know, like you're not just gonna run laps in like 28 degrees Celsius heat. I don't know whatever the fuck that is in Fahrenheit. Like run and do long toss. Like you're not gonna be John Smoltz just doing that, right? And there's just there's so many resources now available that help pitchers get better. And it's data-driven research. Like, you look at what Driveline's doing. You look at all the coaches that are being hired that are just have experience working it with the sort of biomechanical stuff that Driveline is doing. Like, Jason Ochard is being hired by the Phillies. The Angels just hired a guy.
Daniels is going to the San Francisco Giants. Like, those kind of people.
There we go. The Jays just hired a couple of guys. Like, look at what the Indians are doing, what the Dodgers are doing, what the Tampa Bay Rays are doing. You know, there's – look at what Houston's been doing, right? Like, everything is so like, you can literally just look at Anthony Brady, look at his Twitter, and you'll know exactly why one guy is throwing harder than another. And you can use biomechanics and use technology to pinpoint the difference, right? So using
we were just talking about this earlier. They literally just released a book 3 days ago it's the first book that I've ever seen of this kind that literally goes into detail about data-driven research and pitching. Other than, like, say, Hacking the Kinetic Chain, this is the first book that's out there that I've seen that actually goes very, very much into detail about the intricacies of pitch spin, pitch design, mm-hmm. you know, all development, all those kind of things. Like, in general, mm-hmm. like, it's where the game is, and it kind of irritates me that John Smoltz literally says, oh, well, these guys are training for the short run and not the long run. It's like, no, they're building the foundation mm-hmm. to have that career, have that long-lasting career. Mm-hmm. Because you're not going to have that long – unless you just have this amazing talent that you get because some people just have that athletic ability. Mm-hmm. And unless you have that, guess what? Like, you're not even going to make it to the point of even getting a chance to have a 6-year career mm-hmm. or et cetera, because of how much more advanced this game is now than it was back then. This isn't East-West anymore. You don't just throw two seamers in and sliders away and get away with that. Yeah. Now it's North-South. Mm-hmm. Now you have to throw 95-plus and locate it up and have a nasty split change, have a nasty changeup, nasty slider, just to not give up 500-foot dongs to right field. Mm-hmm. Like, seriously, like, this is how talented these hitters are. Yeah. Look, I go back to, like, the ALDS 2017 ALDS Game 5 when Didi Gregorius takes two sliders off Corey Kluber that aren't even that bad of pitches. They are literally on the inside corner located beautifully, and he hits them 500 feet over the right field fence. That just shows you how hard this game is now. Mm-hmm. Like, those are wicked pitches. Like, in general, it's like, no, it's because players are getting better. Mm-hmm. The game is changing. The game is evolving.
Yeah.
Like, don't sit here and say we have to run poles and do long toss and eat a cheeseburger and we're going to be good to play next week. This isn't 1920 anymore.
Yeah.
Like,
and the game is just,
sorry, that's my rant.
No, I completely agree with you, dude. And you look at baseball right now, like, how many East-West guys do you know that are succeeding? Like, I think Mike Soroka is going to be one of the only legit East-West guys in baseball over the next decade, right? Because people are looking at spin rate, like the four-seam fastballs up is becoming a thing again. Guys are learning how to pitch more efficiently now. Guys are utilizing the technology that's available to literally, you can create your own pitch. That's what Trevor Bauer's been doing, you know?
Trevor's been pitch designing for the last three seasons, and you see how much he's evolved as a pitcher over these last 3 years?
Yeah, like Trevor Bauer.
It's unbelievable.
Like, just a few years ago, Trevor Bauer struggled pitching against lefties. So he goes over to Driveline and creates like some sort of slider, and now that's the pitch he uses against lefties, right? You can literally you can design whatever you want now. Just the fact that you say it on national television when you're supposed to be a voice that's supposed to help like the next generation of pitchers and next generation of players, like, you're just blind to what's happening right now. You know, like,
Carlos Pena is saying the pitchers now should be taking notes from John Smoltz. No, what you should be doing, because here's the thing, your high school coach is not going to help you because your high school coach doesn't know what the hell's going on.
Dude,
your high school coach barely knows how to use a J band properly.
Dude,
like, in general, sorry, that's just another rant for another day. Dude, but it's John just Smoltz, like, seriously.
John's, dude, for years, scouts and John Smoltz probably thought that height is so important for pitchers because of a downhill plane. Right, but I mean,
oh,
but like,
oh,
But you know, like I don't like I'm not a I think that having size and is good for durability. But I mean, like if you're like a like a 6'6" guy and you can have that downhill angle, but like I feel if you have great extension out front, that makes you better than a dude with the, so to speak, the downhill angle, you know? And it's been proven.
Or the way I like to describe it, getting behind the baseball, creating a force vector that gets you behind the baseball. If you do that, it doesn't matter how big you are, you're still going to have success throwing down the slope. The slope is the same size for everybody. It's just a matter of how you get behind the baseball and how you transfer your energy to get behind the baseball. Mm-hmm. Like it's the reason why a lot of people like would use towel drills back in the day, even though that was terrible. Like, it was in theory, an okay concept, but in reality, it was just terrible for a lot of pitchers' pitching mechanics. Like you need to get behind the baseball. So that's why a lot of towel drills like are saying down, 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 extend, down, down, because you want to get behind the baseball. You want to get the baseball in front of you to throw it. But nobody releases a baseball way out in front of you, like where they put the mitt where you'd hit the towel. No, that's not where you put your release point. Your release point is literally the force. I wish I had a picture to show these guys, but it's the force vector that leads up your back after everything has been rotated, and it's right at the point of release, which is literally basically parallel to your head. So in general, it's like, no, it's like towel drills are awful. And by the way, just to roast John Smoltz some more, John Smoltz is probably going to come out with his own John Smoltz pitching ranch, where basically everybody does towel drills, J-bands, and does long toss and runs. That's basically what they probably all do. Or and like Carlos lightweight.
Carlos Pena is going to send his kids over there in the summer.
Oh, yeah, no, and it's great. And they're going to hit 83 miles an hour with like okay break on their two seamers because John Smoltz is going to teach him his grip. And it's going to be like, okay, that's pretty cool. But then they're never going to grow. And it's like the monetary gains that you get like at a gym when you just start lifting for bulk out of nowhere, but you don't actually do it with correct isometric form or anything like that. You get the original gains, but then you just pretty much plateau after that.
Right.
Like that's pretty much what's going to happen. So it's like, no, and it's like those guys are never going to see D1 college baseball, which will be sad. But, you know, like that opens up an entire rant for a completely different day when I can rant about college and high school coaches. But the point is a lot of them don't know what the hell they're talking about.
We'll get there. Yeah, I'm always down for ranting. By the way, what was the name of that book you mentioned earlier, like a few minutes ago? The new one?
The book is called Applied Technology in Pitching. It's a really good book because it's interesting because in today's like Twitterverse, like there's obviously a lot of information out there about biomechanics and pitch design and all that kind of stuff, but none of it really goes into too minute, the general things about like what to look for, what it really is and that kind of stuff. Like there's articles that like say, okay, yeah, we use Rapsodo and we use Edgartronic high speed cameras and all that kind of stuff. They're not going to actually tell you how they use that for pitch design or like they're not going to tell you like, okay, when we're looking at a change of spin axis and you know the XYZ axis of all that fun stuff, we're not going to tell you exactly what we're looking for and how we analyze it, because then I'm just giving you my business model and then you can just use it besides coming to us. Like, and that's not a shot at Driveline, that's not a shot at anything like that. At the end of the day, that's their job. They're not going to give away so much, you know, that you don't pay for their services now, because at the end of the day, that's how they make money as a business. It's just, this is the first book out there that I've seen that actually, excuse me, really goes into detail about like what pitch design actually is, what to look for, the general things you need to know about it, and then the development process behind all that fun stuff. And like, I'm looking forward to buying it. Like this book was just released 3 days ago and I'm sure it's going to be a hot commodity come 2-3 weeks from now. So like, I'm going to get my hands on it real quick before, you know, it gets sold out. So in general, I'm going to get my hands on it and it looks like a really fun read, and it's going to be one of those things that I'm not going to be paying attention in class and I'm just going to be reading this book.
Yeah. And just cause we're on the topic of books and because we read, the book Recovery for Baseball, it's a book written by Dr. Steven Oster. He runs baseball development group over here in Toronto. Guys who lift really, really heavy weight, like John Smoltz said, have to recover smart. And if anybody, including John Smoltz, wants to learn about what baseball pitchers are actually doing today, what baseball players are actually doing today, that's a really good book. Like I said earlier on this episode, recovery is it might be even more important than lifting super, super heavy weights, right?
Your recovery in the entire process of all that is actually, to not to my opinion, science has proven it, it's more important than the work. So in general, like, once again, pain is not a natural motion for the human body. Like, our bodies were not meant to throw baseballs at 90 something miles an hour.
Yep.
So no, our recovery process and the attention to detail that we have to take in order to complete the process of recovery and efficiently complete the process of recovery is, to me, just as important, if not more important than the lifting process and the throwing process in general.
There we go.
The baseball development group, you sent me a copy of that book. I read through it. The baseball development group does a really, really good job going into detail and high depth, especially not just for, like, it does a good job putting a lot of the very advanced biomechanical technical things into English for maybe people who don't necessarily understand it.
For the common
people. So in general, like if you're a person, like, let's say you're a dad or, you know, a kid, you have a kid or you're a high school coach that doesn't really know that much about all this stuff. Yeah. Like John Smoltz, and you are kind of just, you know, looking for a book or a guide that, you know, to tell you, like, just not necessarily tell you everything you need to be doing for recovery, but point you in the right direction. Then guess what? I mean, I would definitely recommend that book for sure. I would also recommend the book that was just released by Zach DeChant over at TCU. It's called Movement Over Maxes. It's a really good book that actually gives you a good baseline, not just about isometric movement and all that kind of stuff, but just in general, gives you a good baseline for a, like, training program, a lifting program for baseball players universally. Just in general, to give you a good base on what you really should be doing to help get your players not just get monetary gains, but actual athletic gains, not just in the room, but in terms of on the field as well. So it's a really good book. It's something I'm reading through right now, and it's got a lot of really useful information. It's called Movement. It's by Zach DeChant. It's got a foreword by Matt Carpenter. It's a really good, it's a really good bang for your buck. It's a really good book overall.
There we go.
Are we doing like a book club?
Dude, we were not supposed to talk about any of this today on this podcast.
We were actually supposed to talk about how to work in baseball, but I feel like that's something we can wait.
Yeah, we can talk about that anytime. Like, everything that we discussed today, one, we got triggered on our way back from school. That was half the episode. And then scrolling through Twitter, we're like, oh, they just announced the Hall of Famers for the year. Yeah, we'll talk about that as well. And
yep, and then it turned into book club.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there we go. Anything before we wrap this up, Pete, has there been anything else that has just been triggering you lately?
Honestly, no. I mean, I've just been now that we've been talking about these books, now I'm just thinking, okay, what work do I have to get done tonight so I can read another chapter out of Movement Over Maxes? And then I'm also thinking about how do I get my hands on that new applied pitching technology book?
You buy it.
Yeah, I buy it. But once again, I'm a broke college student, so I got to work on getting the money for it.
This is true. There's always prostituting. And I think, like, not a lot of people consider it, but I think college students, like, you can really make a living for, like, the 3-4 years here in school. Like, dude, you have really nice hair. I think you can pull it off.
I guess you voted me the best hair in company.
Yeah.
Like, in general,
there's a lot of people in that
company,
that's
going to hold some weight in the prosecution.
Dude, there's a lot of people in the company. That's like 80 grade hair.
Me the best hair. Like, and you didn't even have to think about it. Like, you were just like, yeah, Pete's hair is the best. And I'm just like, yeah, sure. Let's go with it.
Yeah. But, yeah, I don't think I have anything else that I'm really overly triggered about. Really just John Smoltz, Baseball Hall of Fame voters, keeping Barry Bonds, Larry Walker, and Roger Clemens out. Larry Walker because he's Canadian and awesome. Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens because they're meatheads, but awesome. I think I'm good on my end. I think we covered it right.
I'm pretty good on my end too, man. We've been talking for a solid hour, man. I think we got some good quality content out there.
Yeah, honestly, between Wi-Fi connection problems and some baseball talk, I think we did a pretty good job.
Absolutely, man. That's great. And I hope the viewers enjoy this.
There we go. Well, anyways, guys, that's a wrap for this week's episode. We'll be back next week looking at getting a couple of guests on for the upcoming weeks. Till next week, Pete.
Till next week, guys. Have a great week.